Chapter 29. Any he has heard since. In fact, he has heard none since. When the old couple are in high good humor, the old gentleman will take the old lady round the waist and say, "My dear, do sing me one of your own songs," and she sits down and sings with her old voice, and, as she sings, the roses of her youth bloom again for a moment. Rattler resuscitates, and she is dancing a minuet in powder and a train. This is another digression. It was occasioned by looking at poor Dennis's face, while his wife was screeching, and, believe me, the former was the more pleasant occupation. Bottom, tickled by the fairies, could not have been in greater ecstasies. He thought the music was divine, and had further reason for exulting in it, which was, that his wife was always in a good humor after singing, and never would sing, but in that happy frame of mind. Dennis had hinted so much in our little colloquy during the 10 minutes of his lady's absence in the boudoir. So, at the conclusion of each piece, we shouted "Bravo!" and clapped our hands like mad. Such was my insight into the life of Surgeon Dionysius Haggarty and his wife. And I must have come upon him at a favorable moment too, for poor Dennis has spoken, subsequently, of our delightful evening at Kingstown, and evidently thinks to this day that his friend was fascinated by the entertainment there. His inward economy was as follows. He had his half pay, £1,000, about £100 a year, that his father left, and his wife had £60 a year from the mother, which the mother, of course, never paid. He had no practice, for he was absorbed in attention to his Jemima and the children, whom he used to wash, to dress, to carry out, to walk, or to ride, as we have seen, and who could not have a servant, as their dear blind mother could never be left alone. Mrs. Haggarty, a great invalid, used to lie in bed till 1, and have breakfast and hot luncheon there. A fifth part of his income was spent in having her wheeled about in a chair, by which it was his duty to walk daily for an allotted number of hours. Dinner would ensue, and the amateur clergy, who abound in Ireland, and of whom Mrs. Haggarty was a great admirer, lauded her everywhere as a model of resignation and virtue, and praised beyond measure the admirable piety with which she bore her sufferings. Well, every man to his taste. It did not certainly appear to me that she was the martyr of the family. The circumstances of my marriage with Jemima, Dennis said to me, in some after conversations we had on this interesting subject, were the most romantic and touching you can conceive. You saw what an impression the dear girl had made upon me when we were at Wheaton, for from the first day I set eyes on her, and heard her sing her delightful song of Dark-Eyed Maiden of Araby, apostrophe I felt, and said to Tourniquet of ours, that very night, that she was the Dark-Eyed Maid of Araby for me, not that she was, you know, for she was born in Shropshire. But I felt that I had seen the woman who was to make me happy or miserable for life. You know how I proposed for her at Kenilworth, and how I was rejected, and how I almost shot myself in consequence. No, you don't know that, for I said nothing about it to anyone, but I can tell you it was a very near thing, and a very lucky thing for me, I didn't do it. For, would you believe it? The dear girl was in love with me all the time. Was she really? Said I, who recollected that Miss Gam's love of those days showed itself in a very singular manner. But the fact is, when women are most in love, they most disguise it. Over head and ears in love with poor Dennis, resumed that worthy fellow, who'd ever have thought it? But I have it from the best authority, from her own mother, with whom I'm not over and above good friends now. But of this fact she assured me, and I'll tell you when, and how. We were quartered at Cork 3 years, after we were at Wheaton, and it was our last year at home. And a great mercy that my dear girl spoke in time, or where should we have been now? Well, one day, marching home from parade, I saw a lady seated at an open window, by another who seemed an invalid, and the lady at the window, who was dressed in the profoundest mourning, cried out, with a scream, "Gracious heavens! It's Mr. Haggarty of the 120th. Apostrophe, sure I know that voice. Apostrophe, says I to Whiskerton. It's a great mercy you don't know it a deal too well. Apostrophe, says he. It's Lady Gammon. She's on some husband hunting scheme, depend on it, for that daughter of hers. She was at Bath last year on the same errand, and at Cheltenham the year before, where, heaven bless you, she's as well known as the hen and chickens. Apostrophe, I'll thank you, not to speak disrespectfully of Miss Jemima Gam, apostrophe said I to Whiskerton. She's of one of the first families in Ireland, and whoever says a word against a woman I once proposed for, insults me, do you understand? Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, marry her, if you like, apostrophe says Whiskerton, quite peevish. Marry her, and be hanged. Apostrophe, apostrophe, marry her, the very idea of it set my brain a-whirling, and made me 1,000 times more mad than I am by nature. You may be sure I walked up the hill to the parade ground that afternoon, and with a beating heart too. I came to the widow's house. It was called New Molloyville, apostrophe as this is. Wherever she takes a house for 6 months she calls it New Molloyville, apostrophe and has had one in Mallow, in Bandon, in Sligo, in Castlebar, in Fermoy, in Drogheda, and the deuce knows where besides. But the blinds were down, and though I thought I saw somebody behind them, no notice was taken of poor Denny Haggarty, and I paced up and down all mess time in hopes of catching a glimpse of Jemima, but in vain. The next day I was on the ground again. I was just as much in love as ever, that's the fact. I'd never been in that way before, look you, and when once caught, I knew it was for life. There's no use in telling you how long I beat about the bush, but when I did get admittance to the house it was through the means of young Castlery Molloy, whom you may remember at Leamington, and who was at Cork for the regatta, and used to dine at our mess, and had taken a mighty fancy to me. When I did get into the house, I say, I rushed in medias res at once. I couldn't keep myself quiet, my heart was too full. Oh, Fitz! I shall never forget the day, the moment I was introduced into the drawing room.
As he began to be agitated, Dennis's brogue broke out with greater richness than ever. But though a stranger may catch, and repeat from memory, a few words, it is next to impossible for him to keep up a conversation in Irish, so that we had best give up all attempts to imitate Dennis.
And I saw old Mother Gam, said he, my feelings overcame me all at once. I rowled down on the ground, sir, as if I'd been hit by a musket ball. Dearest madam, apostrophe says I, I'll die if you don't give me Jemima. Apostrophe, apostrophe, heavens, Mr. Haggarty. Apostrophe, apostrophe says she, how you seize me with surprise. Castlery, my dear nephew, had you not better leave us? Apostrophe, apostrophe, and away he went, lighting a cigar, and leaving me still on the floor. Rise, Mr. Haggarty, apostrophe continued the widow. I will not attempt to deny that this constancy towards my daughter is extremely affecting, however sudden your present appeal may be. I will not attempt to deny that, perhaps, Jemima may have a similar feeling, but, as I said, I never could give my daughter to a Catholic. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I'm as good a Protestant as yourself. Ma'am, apostrophe says I, my mother was an heiress, and we were all brought up her way. Apostrophe, apostrophe, that makes the matter very different, apostrophe says she, turning up the whites of her eyes. How could I ever have reconciled it to my conscience, to see my blessed child married to a papist? How could I ever have taken him to Molloyville? Well, this obstacle being removed, I must put myself no longer in the way between two young people. I must sacrifice myself, as I always have, when my darling girl was in question. You shall see her, the poor dear lovely gentle sufferer, and learn your fate from her own lips. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the sufferer, ma'am, apostrophe says I, has Miss Gam been ill? Apostrophe, what? Haven't you heard? Apostrophe cried the widow. Haven't you heard of the dreadful illness which so nearly carried her from me?
for 9 weeks. Mr. Agardi, I watched her day and night, without taking a wink of sleep. For 9 weeks she lay trembling between death and life, and I paid the doctor 83 guineas. She is restored now, but she is the wreck of the beautiful creature she was. Suffering, and, perhaps, another disappointment, but we won't mention that now have so pulled her down. But I will leave you, and prepare my sweet girl for this strange, this entirely unexpected visit. I won't tell you what took place between me and Jemima, to whom I was introduced as she sat in the darkened room, poor sufferer. Nor describe to you with what a thrill of joy I seized, after groping about for it, her poor emaciated hand. She did not withdraw it. I came out of that room an engaged man, sir, and now I was enabled to show her that I had always loved her sincerely, for there was my will, made 3 years back, in her favor. That night she refused me, as I told thee. I would have shot myself, but they'd have brought me in non compos, and my brother Mick would have contested the will, and so I determined to live, in order that she might benefit by my dying. I had but £1,000 then. Since that my father has left me 2 more. I willed every shilling to her, as you may fancy, and settled it upon her when we married, as we did soon after. It was not for some time that I was allowed to see the poor girl's face, or, indeed, was aware of the horrid losses he had sustained. Fancy my agony, my dear fellow, when I saw that beautiful wreck. There was something not a little affecting to think, in the conduct of this brave fellow, that he never once, as he told his story, seemed to allude to the possibility of his declining, to marry a woman who was not the same as the woman he loved, but that he was quite as faithful to her now, as he had been when captivated by the poor tawdry charms of the silly Miss of Leamington. It was hard, that such a noble heart as this should be flung away upon yonder foul mass of greedy vanity. Was it hard, or not, that he should remain deceived in his obstinate humility, and continue to admire the selfish silly being whom he had chosen to worship? I should have been appointed surgeon of the regiment, continued Dennis, soon after, when it was ordered abroad to Jamaica, where it now is. But my wife would not hear of going, and said she would break her heart if she left her mother. So I retired on half pay, and took this cottage, and in case any practice should fall in my way, why, there is my name on the brass plate, and I'm ready for anything that comes. But the only case that ever did come was one day when I was driving my wife in the chaise, and another one night, of a beggar with a broken head. My wife makes me a present of a baby every year, and we've no debts. And between you and me and the post, as long as my mother-in-law is out of the house, I'm as happy as I need be. What, you and the old lady don't get on well? Said I can't say we do. It's not in nature, you know, said Dennis, with a faint grin. He comes into the house, and turns it topsy-turvy. When she's here I'm obliged to sleep in the scullery. She's never paid her daughter's income since the first year, though she brags about her sacrifices, as if she had ruined herself for Jemima. And besides, when she's here, there's a whole clan of the Malloys, horse, foot, and dragoons, that are quartered upon us, and eat me out of house and home. And is Malloyville such a fine place as the widow described it? Asked I, laughing, and not a little curious. Oh, a mighty fine place entirely, said Dennis. Here's the oak park of 200 acres, the finest land he ever saw, only they've cut all the wood down. The garden in the old Malloy's time, they say, was the finest ever seen in the west of Ireland, but they've taken all the glass to mend the house windows, and small blame to them either. There's a clear rent roll of 3,500 a year, only it's in the hand of receivers, besides other debts, for which there is no land security. Your cousin-in-law, Castlery Malloy, won't come into a large fortune? Oh, he'll do very well, said Dennis. As long as he can get credit, he's not the fellow to stint himself. Faith, I was fool enough to to put my name to a bit of paper for him, and as they could not catch him in Mayo, they laid hold of me at Kingstown here. And there was a pretty to-do. Didn't Mrs. Gam say I was ruining her family, that's all? I paid it by installments, for all my money is settled on Jemima, and Castlery, who's an honorable fellow, offered me any satisfaction in life. Anyhow, he couldn't do more than that. Of course not. And now your friends? Yes, and he and his aunt have had a tiff too, and he abuses her properly, I warrant thee. He says that she carried about Jemima from place to place, and flung her at the head of every unmarried man in England, amidst my poor Jemima, and she all the while dying in love with me. As soon as she got over the smallpox she took it at Fermoy, God bless her, I wish I'd been by to be her nurse tender. As soon as she was rid of it, the old lady said to Castlery, Castlery, go to the barracks, and find out in the army list, where the 120th is. Off she came to Cork hot foot. It appears that, while she was ill, Jemima's love for me showed itself in such a violent way, that her mother was overcome, and promised that, should the dear child recover, she would try and bring us together. Castlery says she would have gone after us to Jamaica. I have no doubt she would, said I. Could you have a stronger proof of love than that? Cried Dennis. My dear girl's illness and frightful blindness have, of course, injured her health and her temper. She cannot in her position look to the children, you know, and so they come under my charge for the most part, and her temper is unequal, certainly. But you see what a sensitive, refined, elegant creature she is, and may fancy that she's often put out by a rough fellow like me. Here Dennis left me, saying it was time to go and walk out the children, and I think his story has matter of some wholesome reflection in it for bachelors who are about to change their condition, or may console some who are mourning their celibacy. Mary, gentlemen, if you like, leave your comfortable dinner at the club for cold mutton, and curl papers at your home. Give up your books or pleasures, and take to yourselves wives and children. But think well on what you do first, as I have no doubt you will after this advice and example. Advice is always useful in matters of love. Men always take it. They always follow other people's opinions, not their own. They always profit by example. When they see a pretty woman, and feel the delicious madness of love coming over them, they always stop to calculate her temper, her money, their own money, or suitableness for the married life. Ha, ha, ha. Let us fool in this way no more. I have been in love 43 times with all ranks and conditions of women, and would have married every time, if they would have let me. How many wives had King Solomon, the wisest of men? And is not that story a warning to us that love is master of the wisest? It is only fools who defy him. I must come, however, to the last, and perhaps the saddest, part of poor Denny Haggarty's history. I met him once more, and in such a condition as made me determined to write this history. In the month of June last I happened to be at Richmond, a delightful little place of retreat. And there, sunning himself upon the terrace, was my old friend of the 120th. He looked older, thinner, poorer, and more wretched than I had ever seen him. Hat, you have given up Kingstown? Said I, shaking him by the hand. Yes, says he. And is my lady and your family here at Richmond? Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.